Hi, good evening. This is Deborah Herman, and you're listening to Soul Odyssey Radio. And each week we talk to you about spirituality and the process of soul growth. And this week we are going to be talking to you about a subject I know that is of interest to many of you, and that is spiritual writing and publishing. Because, as many of you know, the spiritual path and the writer's journey are linked. And as you grow spiritually, many of you feel called to share what it is that you learn about your process with other people. It becomes a calling. But there are many miles between idea and seeing your book on the shelf. And so with me tonight, I'm very happy to say I have a very, very special guest. Joining me is Jeff Herman. Yes, there is no coincidence. We do have the same last name. We are a married couple as well as a business partnership. Jeff is a literary agent and has been in the publishing industry for at least 20 or more years now. Is that correct, Jeff?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been that long. He is a person who has devoted his life to not only agenting some of the finest books, nonfiction primarily, but also he has been teaching writers for many years, since the very first incarnation of the Jeff Herman's Guide to Book Editors, Publishers, and Literary Agents. He's been teaching people how to get past the gatekeepers in the publishing industry, so that he's able to, so that people are able to get their books published. In spite of all of the obstacles and all of the challenges, you can become a publishing insider. So, Jeff, way back when, what inspired you to create the what is now considered the Bible of the industry, the Jeff Herman's Guide?
Well, before I became a literary agent, I was in the public relations business. And one of the reference books that made our job much easier was there were these huge books you could buy, which would identify all the TV shows, radio shows, and newspapers, print media around the country by city, and it would give you the names of all the reporters or the contacts or the producers who you needed to make contact with in order to try to get a story placed. When I transitioned to book publishing as a literary agent, I was surprised to discover that there was no public reference or even private reference in which the names of editors or much information about publishers was available in any centralized way. There were probably lots of fragmented sources for pieces of the information. And there were very few centralized sources of information about who the agents were.
So, in other words, when you were a public relations person, you could pretty much get access to people, right, and pitch them a story. And so then you went from being a public relations person to being chopped liver.
Well, because I didn't even know the name of
right.
the person that I made, or if that person even existed. So I started from scratch accumulating, just by cold calling, who these people were and what their specialties were. And as I was creating my own database, I realized that this had value and it should be made available to as many people who wanted it.
But they didn't make it – I guess my joke about you became chopped liver is that they didn't really make it easy for you to get these names. And
well,
to get through to the right people.
Yes. The publishing industry, by nature, wants to be as covert as possible. It's not an open-door policy. It's true that everything they publish is outsourced. I mean, the writers are not in-house employees. But they do not want to be publicly known or publicly easily accessible to Jane and John Q. Ryder. So you really do have to pull teeth to get this information.
Right, and that was, you know, back then when you were starting out, and you created the very first writer's guide is, you know, a small volume, and now it's a tome. Literally, you can get your exercise with it. But it created access for people to, you know, the reason I bring this up is that, you know, the topic for tonight is spiritual writing from inspiration to publication, because people who write this material seem to even have a harder road to get past the gatekeepers. Am I correct?
Everything is comparative. I would not say that any particular category is necessarily tougher than another, because it's really a case-by-case basis. Some people would say it's probably toughest for fiction writers. Even though most books that get published are actually fiction, most people who are writing fiction. So the competition to get access and to get published for fiction writers is much more keen than it is for nonfiction writers in general.
So I do want to remind our listening audience that this is a live call-in show, and now is your chance to talk to the experts, myself included. I can also talk to you about some of the blocks you may be having to, you know, developing your book and finding your divine inner voice, as we call it. The telephone number here is 888-815-9756 if you would like to speak with either myself or Jeff about your book. You know, many of the people that I've met through Facebook and other social networking avenues entered the top spiritual writer contest, and there were many, many entrants, over 3,000. And I know that I think only like 250 made it to the finals, you know, the semifinals. Well, as you know, Jeff, many of the 3,000 have to have books that are publishable, and yet they weren't able to get past, you know, that round, and they're looking still to get published. What would you, you know, would you say to them?
Well, you know, you never know when it's your turn. And the ratio is any book at any particular point that's getting published, you can figure there are 1,000 wannabe manuscripts that want to be published at the same exact time. So if you look at it like that, you know, it's awesome. It's like, well, gee, I mean, it's, you know, I have to be 1 out of 1,000. But when you're being published, you're 1 out of 1. And there are many reasons why some people get published and some people don't. The quality of your material is a factor, but it's not the only factor. And I've seen it happen again and again, where people who write really well do not get published, and people who maybe are not writing as well as some of those who aren't getting published are getting published again and again and again. And the reasons for that are not just luck. It's because some people are really good at getting published, and some people are only good at writing but not good at getting published. And it's, it involves a whole scheme of strategies.
You know, I find, because my specialty area is spirituality, and my identity, I guess, is as a spiritual teacher and mystic, you know, a lot of the people that... Connected?
I hear you now.
Yeah, okay. I think we had technical difficulty
okay.
For a moment, but we're back live. I didn't notice. But anyway, what I was going to say is that, you know, the people that, I know many times are called to write a book and they feel, you know, this higher spiritual sense, but there is a need to understand that, you know, God needs an editor. And people, human beings, we're souls in human bodies, you know, people need to navigate the waters of the industry. Now, we do have a caller. Let me invite George Ann from North Carolina to join the conversation. George Ann.
Hi, Deborah. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm a big fan of your books. I have your guide, and I also have the Write the Perfect Book Proposal. So I feel like I've been arming myself for this.
Wonderful.
I guess my question is, my book has been a work in progress for over 5 years, and I did enlist the help of a journalist to collaborate with me on my book, and I think I'll be done with the phases of it by the end of the month, and I am looking to get you some insight as far as the structure of the industry, because since I've been reading your books and since I have been following along, I feel like the industry has really gotten a lot more competitive, and it's been a lot harder to gain access.
Is that a question or an observation?
Well, it's part of an observation, but where I'm going with that is, as far as the literary agents that I've studied in your books, for example, do you find that it is just as important to understand what their hobbies are, their likenesses are? Is that as important as what they're looking for to represent?
Well, the easy answer to that is no, it's not as important. But we give that information because it is of secondary value. You have to understand that agents, on average, are rejecting 98%. Of what they see, which, again, it sounds like an awesome statistic that you only have a 2% chance. But agents are not in lockstep. I mean, there's items that I reject either because it's not a category I represent or just because I'm being very stupid that day, whereas another agent will gladly grab it, either because they're on the ball or it is a category they represent. So one agent's pile of rejections could be another agent's pile of gems. But because it is a competitive process, when you're trying to get an agent's attention, it might be very useful to have some background information about that agent, which you could then use to get that person's attention. If I get a letter from someone, and in the very first paragraph, they're telling me how great I am, you know, and they're really feeding my ego, it works 100% of the time. And I don't think I'm unique that way. I think I'm very much on average. And I think any agent, even though they may realize it's being extremely patronizing, will have no choice but to read that first paragraph in which you're commending them for their hobbies, you're commending them for other books they sold, you're commending them for the day they were born or whatever information they provided. It's very much of a way to hook somebody into a letter which may otherwise be very, very boring and like the 10th letter they have to read that hour.
Or that
now, I have
half found hour.
I'm sorry?
No, I was saying or that half hour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, really. And I found it very I hope it's useful, but I found it very interesting that to know some of the books that they've represented or that they've worked on, you know, over the years. And I have actually purchased some books of the literary agents that they have stood behind. So is that helpful at all, or is that another patronizing thing?
Well, Jeff, I do want to say that since I first heard your voice, Georgianne, I'm also feeling like for you, you're really just going to have to dive in at this point. You're doing all the right things. You're doing all the research, and you know, you could probably teach a class on this, but it's time for you to really just set it free and see what happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because my book is supposed to be done in a few weeks as far as the final draft, so it is time to dive in. And your show is coming at a really critical time for me.
Yeah, other comment,
yeah.
Because you had, started off with what I think is, fear-based thinking, about how it's even tougher now, more competitive, more restrictive. And I don't know if that is more true now than it would have been at any time in the recent past. I mean, people say that, and by saying it, they feel it, but even if there's some truth to it, so what? Don't let that be the definition of what you're dealing with. Just really go at it with a very positive attitude that you have a lot of value to give to agents, to publishers, and to readers.
I appreciate that. So the beliefs that I have to really dive through those.
Absolutely. And especially for this kind of book, get out of your own way and just let it be born. It's time. It's like an elephant gestation period. Okay?
You're right. I thank you.
Okay. Thank you, too.
Goodbye.
Give us a
thank
call
you.
Back.
I will, and I appreciate your show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Georgianne from North Carolina. Again, this is a live call-in show, 888-815-9756. And you've got the husband and wife team extraordinaire, me, Deborah Herman, and my wonderful husband and business partner, Jeff Herman, who, as humble as he is, has made a great difference throughout his years in the industry. He's made a great difference in the lives of many, many writers by providing books and insights that they really can't get anywhere else. How to get past the gatekeepers and how to improve your chances of being in that upper 2%, because there's no reason it can't be you. But I also like to say when we're teaching in various venues that, some people are very unrealistic, particularly people who write spiritual material, and because, we all say, well, God told me to write this. And I want to remind you again, we are spiritual beings in a human world, and you wouldn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to be a brain surgeon, and the next day you're a brain surgeon. You have to go through a learning curve. You have to refine your craft, and you need to understand the nuances of the industry.
I just wanted to add to that. God probably tells a lot of people to do a lot of things. So he may tell a certain individual to write a book, but that doesn't mean he went and told me or another agent to represent that book, or a particular editor or a particular publisher to publish that book. So just because you were told to do something or you feel that you were inspired to do something doesn't necessarily mean that it applies to those people who you are contacting.
You need to present yourself with the protocols of the industry so that you are taken seriously as a business person, because all of you understand that we are now coming into our own, but people who are, what we used to call new agey, or you're mystical, or you're spiritual, or whatever, we've often also been perceived as being flaky and woo-woo and all of those things. And, we're not. Some of us maybe we are. And I think that some of us have a more technicolor view of reality. But I take my work seriously, and I know that you do as well. So you need to learn these, these ways of doing business so that you put yourself in that higher percentage. You also, Jeff, we've had some very interesting experiences with people who didn't quite get that, haven't we?
Well, yes, and I have to say that my immediate instinct, or reflex, rather, is to become very wary when the first thing I'm hearing from someone who's pitching me about a project is that God told them to write it. because first of all, it makes me feel like there's a lot of pressure on me to understand or support something that maybe I'm not feeling, you know. And it confuses me when that's the hammer that they're trying to hit me over the head with.
I'm going to share a story. And again, my life is as a spiritual person, the universe, God, it's the center of my life. I would not want, you know, but I've been teaching about the seven lessons. One of them is the ego lesson. And years back, we had someone contact the office to tell us that they were a prophet of God and that we, you know, that we had to represent this book and, you know, or else. And that was really scary. And, you know, and so that was not the best way to approach it. And this might have been a prophet.
And being told to do something by God is not necessarily the measure of its marketability, in my experience. You know,
like we've talked about the fact that, you know, I think that we've both had to learn over the years how to be a skilled literary agent, how to work in the business world. If we're going to help people to exchange important ideas, we have to learn how to do it in this world, right?
Well, it certainly makes a very crucial difference.
Right. So once you got into the literary agent business, I guess you liked it.
Yeah. I decided to stick with it. I was kind of wandering around for a few years, dabbling, trying different things when I was in my 20s, which is, of course, a natural opportunity to do that. You know, there's a period of time there where you really don't have, or at least I didn't have, any responsibilities other than to myself. And didn't have any stiff material needs. So, you know, that's a period where you can make a lot of mistakes. And also, which is very common to youth, which is what I consider 20s to be, both when I was in my 20s and now, is you don't know what you don't know. And you don't yet know what you're not supposed to try. And you don't yet know that you're not even supposed to be doing that. You know, you don't know what the protocol is. So it creates a real opportunity for you to kind of break old molds, which are maybe, you know, shouldn't exist anymore. Not because you want to break them, but because you don't know that you are. And that's a great opportunity to create things for yourself and to create new templates for other people.
And what became advantageous from creating the, you know, the Jeff Herman's Guide and the formats that we use now about, you know, book proposals and all of these other things is that in many ways the industry adopted them because it created a way for screening to be easier. When, you know, you'll see when you try to send your books out to different publishers, they'll always say, well, we don't accept anything without an agent. Well, I think that some of the result of the books that we've done is that it's conformed some of the standards. And if you write to someone with a name, with honing in on who they are, what they want, you have a chance that they'll actually read your letter, even if you don't go through an agent.
Yes, the publishing companies, especially the largest publishing companies, have policies. They've had it for years that they will not consider anything that's unagented or unsolicited. Unagented, you don't have an agent. Unsolicited, that means they did not invite you to call them or write to them. And they have that policy for a good reason, because they do not want to become inundated with thousands of manuscripts that they have no interest in reading and are totally unqualified to be published anyway. So they really have to have that kind of policy in place to scare everybody away. But the truth of the matter is the policy is very porous. People do get published all the time without having agents and without being solicited, because they found ways to break through the so-called wall or to go around the wall.
But they also do that in a way that fits, you know, that's polite, you know, like you're supposed to start with a good query letter.
Yes,
right?
there are certain tricks and certain techniques that will enhance your odds greatly if you go directly to the publisher. I advise people to try to get an agent in each and every instance, because once you have an agent, which is not necessarily easy to accomplish, but once you have an agent, you now at least your work will now have access to the powers that be, because publishers will grant access to anything that is represented, assuming they like the agent who's representing you. Because they know it's been screened. They know they're not wasting their time. It doesn't mean they'll acquire it or that they'll make an offer for it, but at least they'll consider it. If you can't get an agent, then you have to do kind of what an agent would do, and you have to know what an agent knows. You have to be your own agent. So you have to know who's publishing what. You don't send fiction to publishers who only do nonfiction, for instance. You have to find the names of the editors, which you can use through our book or perhaps other sources. And then what you want to do is craft a query letter, which is really a pitch letter, in which you are trying to get that editor to want to go to the next step, which is to request your book proposal or your manuscript. If you just go send that person your manuscript without sending the query letter, they may just realize that you've got their name and that you're just looking for a way to bypass their policy. But if you send them a pitch letter, that's more likely to be opened and at least glanced at. And if it grabs their attention, they will go to the next step and say, let's take a look at this proposal.
You know, it's kind of like if people have watched American Idol. On American Idol, they really are looking for talented people. But when you've got someone who goes to one of the auditions and it's the ones that they always show where the person's like really bad, and then they try to go again and do another song and to add more stuff, you know, if you have something that's good quality, less is more. You want to, you know, fit within the parameters of time. I don't think that people realize how much volume of submissions, the amount of submissions that both agents and publishing houses receive in any given day. A lot of it's now done electronically, but even with electronic submissions, the amount of paper that we maneuver every day is enormous. And so, you know, if you can entice them with something, they really are looking for good stuff.
And you know, even if it's electronic, digital, it still requires brain attention. It's very good for people who are trying to get published to put themselves in the shoes of the editors and the agents and realize what it is those players want and need. An editor does want to find good books that he or she can edit and publish that will be commercially successful and critically successful. And an agent does want to find people, writers, who he or she can represent successfully and get them published. And that's their goal, you know? But they don't, neither party makes any money by having to sift through thousands of manuscripts which go nowhere.
And it's not that, right, and it's not that we're mean. We're not trying to dash people's hopes, but if, you know, it's not, this is like our day job. I mean, this is how these careers operate. And so it has to be material that people will want to read. And I want to address that, particularly for the spiritual market. People who feel called to write and who feel that their messages are vitally important, they are and they may be, but they feel a sense of urgency, and that doesn't always fit within the parameters of the publishing industry either. And you always need to keep in mind, for anything that you're doing, you have to keep in mind why would someone want to read this book? And that's the question you always have to keep in your mind as you're writing to an editor, an agent, or as you're writing the book. What is it, what's in it for the reader, not just your own experience?
Good point,
correct?
Because the consumer is the final judge. A lot of books are put out there that nobody buys or even wants to buy. On the other hand, there are books that probably don't get published that people would buy. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. We're all imperfect decisions are being made in both directions all the time. But at the end of the day, it's the consumer that gets to vote, either by buying it or not.
A lot of people are looking towards self-publishing, which is not a bad idea necessarily for everyone. But what do you think about that?
Well, as long as you go into self-publishing knowing what it does provide and what it doesn't provide, I think it's fine. It's become, over the past few years, very economical if you do it right. Even if you just do it print on demand, that's probably the most economical way to do it because you don't have to create and store an inventory. You simply, manufacture the book each time somebody orders one, or you just do it as a download. The mistake that some people make is they think that by self-publishing, they are somehow going to get traditional bookstore distribution, and that very rarely is the case. I mean, there are exceptions to that where a book somehow did achieve distribution. But those are exceptions to what basically is an extremely unlikely scenario. If you self-publish, bookstores, especially the chain stores, are not going to be knocking on your door asking to open an account with you. So your sales are really going to have to be direct response or back of the room if you do programs.
And even though you feel that what you have to say can change the world, you have to have access to the world. People need to know you exist. Again, this is a live call-in show. This is your host, Deborah Herman, with Soul Odyssey Radio. And my guest this evening is the wonderful Jeff Herman. Yes, he is my husband, but he is also a literary agent extraordinaire, and the author of several books, including Jeff Herman's Guide to Book Editors, Publishers, and Literary Agents, Write the Perfect Book Proposal, and has been responsible for the existence of how many books at this point?
We've agented many hundreds of books. Let's put it that way.
I think you've sold over 800 books at this point.
It's very possible.
I know you're very modest, but these are books that actually over the years these books exist. They're on the shelf, and yes, there have been changes over the last several years, but for people who are writing spiritually oriented books, the change actually is a positive one because much of this material is being mainstreamed. Now, Jeff, the word that everyone hates, platform, what can you say about it?
Well, okay, that's become much more formalized. One of the conditions that has crystallized over the past few years is that publishers now are more and more demanding that the writer be his or her own marketing department. There's almost a complete abdication by the publisher as far as creating sales and creating visibility for obscure writers. So a writer may have an excellent concept, an excellent nonfiction book, but if he or she has no visibility and no plan to create visibility, chances are the book will be rejected because the publisher will not do that for you and there's no way that your book is going to be publicized. So what that translates to is as a writer, especially for nonfiction, you need to have your own network, your own sales structure in place, which is known as a platform. That could include having a very active, lively website. It could include having an active seminar program. It could include having your own radio show. Whatever it is, you need to really be able to show that you are going to be able to make people know that your book exists, especially people who are likely to buy it.
And, yeah, and it shows also how dedicated you are to your own material. And you've got to believe in yourself. If this is what you want to do, this is how you want to devote your life, you need to show that you're going to put your energy, your energy into backing yourself up. Now, another point that popped into my mind as we're talking about this is, again, people's unrealistic expectations about the writing industry. Do not give up your day job. It doesn't mean that people can't be successful as writers, but you need to, you know, especially spiritual people, we forget we need to be grounded in day-to-day needs. You need to make sure you've got food, shelter, you know, transportation. Once you've got all of that taken care of, then it gives God also the freedom to work with you, spirit, angels, because God's time and our time are very different things. Let's say, you know, I mean, I hate to say also publishing time because it makes them sound like they're God, but in some ways, you know, publishing time has its own energy as well. They operate on a different dimension. You may write a book this year and it gets sold and it's not going to appear on the shelves for another year. So it's very important for you to continue your efforts, whether building your platform, marketing, writing your next book, doing everything you can so that you're maintaining your presence while this book is being given its launch. Do you agree, Jeff?
Yes, absolutely. Publishing it's an unwise basket to put your eggs in. If you have a dozen eggs, maybe put one or two in the publishing venture. Because the fact of the matter is that you just can't project what's going to happen. Very few writers actually make a living simply from their writing. And when I say a living, I mean like a real, you know, like six figures or something. Very few are at that level where they're actually generating that on an annual basis. They may hit the jackpot, but then not sustain it. However, it's more likely that a lot of people who write are making money because of opportunities that have been generated through the book. The book may have only sold 5,000-10,000 copies in its lifetime, but out of that 5,000 or 10,000 copies, they may have gotten a tremendous number of business referrals, or speaking dates, or job offers, or met their spouse, or whatever the situation may be, all of which were very fulfilling financially or on a personal level because they wrote that book. So you may make a lot of money from your books, and there's no reason why you can't. There's no reason why you won't, but don't assume that you will. And you're more likely to make a lot of money indirectly through the book and achieve a lot of other fulfillment because of the book.
We are in the second half of our hour. I want to remind the listening audience, this is a live call-in. This is your opportunity. Ask your questions, 888-815-9756, 888-815-9756. And writing is in itself a rewarding and spiritual experience. It is the greatest way for you to connect to your higher self, to your inner being, directly to spirit. It is worth doing, whether you are ever published. But again, what is it that is your goal? for wanting to pursue this. Now, I have a book out that's called Spiritual Writing from Inspiration to Publication, which also talks about the challenges of the spiritual messenger. And they are the same as the seven lessons that we've talked about over the last several months. You need to be a centered, balanced person to be a conduit for the higher energy and for the higher truth. But that's between, you know, you and your spiritual path. But if you are choosing this as your journey, then you will have obstacles and tests along the way, and it'll be greatly rewarding on many levels. So I'm encouraging you not to be faint of heart, because there's a reason that you're feeling the pull and that you're feeling called, and that after you write something, you may feel, where did this come from? It's coming from the highest and greatest part of you, and it's very worth doing. So, Jeff, what else can you tell us about the publishing industry and what people need to know?
Well, there's if you're someone who wants to get published, you need to know what it is that will get you the access. And you have to understand that agents, it's not that agents are discourteous or unavailable. They are available. And the purpose of most agents is to find tomorrow's client and to make that client a published author. And in any given year, thousands of people are being successfully published who the year before were unpublished. Nobody is born published. And unless you're the abused child of a celebrity or something like that, you're not going to be have contracts knocking down your door, you know, publishers knocking down your door. But agents are looking for quality material that they, in turn, can sell. And the best way to deal with an agent is to, first of all, find out who they are. You have to know that. And find out which agents are representing books in the area that you're writing. If you're writing romance novels, don't try pitching it to agents who don't represent not only romance novels, but perhaps don't even represent any form of fiction. That's a waste of time. The best way to make contact with an agent initially is to send them a query letter, either hard copy or electronically, or simultaneously send it both, because some agents tend to use their email more, and some agents tend to be more inclined to look at the hard copy incoming. There is no scientific yes or no. It's a very individual basis. Agents are mom-and-pop businesses, and each agent is a species or universe in and onto himself. It's very hard to generalize all agencies because each agent is so unique. But agents will look at these pitch letters, and on the basis of these pitch letters, they will decide whether or not it is worth their time to see your manuscript or see your book proposal or see some sample chapters. Agents discourage you from sending in your entire manuscript because the typical agency is receiving hundreds of cold submissions a week. So if everybody sent in their manuscript, whether it be hard copy or digitally, it would be an unmanageable situation. Agents do not have staffs to deal with that.
Except for the very, very large ones. And they usually And they usually have celebrity clients. And think about all those poor trees. And I just want to interject too.
And the postage expense.
And the postage. And I just want to interject as well that
Okay. What this means is that your pitch letter becomes very crucial. And I read a lot of pitch letters. And so I know just from that 20 years of experience, the good ones and the bad ones. Now, sometimes I'll be able to live through a bad one and still see that there might be a good project there. But exactly. If I'm in an impatient mood or in some way distracted, I may not be able to get through those first paragraphs of the letter to realize that there is something worthwhile there. On the other hand, I can be faked out by a really good pitch letter and think that there's more there than there actually is, get the manuscript or get the proposal, and then realize that it's an empty suit, that they just happened to write a really good pitch letter, you know, but that it wasn't manifested in the form of a good book proposal or manuscript. But it, at least it accomplished that first point, which was to get me going.
Now, speaking of the word manifest, okay, I think it's an important point for people to realize that this whole process is a spiritual journey as well as a journey of business, and that when they sit down to write their book, that they should connect to spirit and to their higher selves so that what they're getting is their truth and their authentic information. Because if their book is so-called meant to be, and then they follow the business aspect of, the publishing industry, there's a good chance that they can at least be in the running to have their book on the shelves. What do you think?
Well, yes, you always need to, if you're going to try to get something published, it's almost a requirement that you approach it with the attitude that it will get published and that it's worthy of getting published. But at the same time, do not express resentment or frustration towards the people who say no, okay? It just means you haven't found the right combination yet. You haven't found the right partners yet. One of the biggest turnoffs is when someone thinks it's incumbent upon you to do what they want you to do, whether they're selling insurance, whether they're selling a car, whether they're selling a pair of shoes. We are all free to make decisions that we think are the best decisions for our own self-interest. And you should never assume just because you want something to happen or you feel that it was ordained that it happened that it's incumbent upon others to just get out of your way or to facilitate that.
So in other words, approach it with a sense of gratitude and openness to
and
being
humility.
Guided. Yes, and humility, and to guidance. If you're doing everything in the right way, but also openness to feedback, because sometimes there may, I know that we've seen potential in a particular project, but the person is so locked into their perspective of what it should be that they don't listen to advice on how to make it exist in the industry. You know, so again, you are a vessel, you are you're a conduit, but you're also a partner. And so it's your job to also learn as much as you can so that you can make these things happen and to be successful. We have 10 minutes remaining in the hour. We can sneak in a caller, 888-815-9756. Don't call it 1 minute to go. I've had that happen. If you have questions, our website for the Jeff Herman Agency is www.jeffherman.com. Where you can learn more about Jeff and the books and everything else that you'd ever want to know. And you can also check out my work as a mystic, medium, animal communicator, spiritual writing consultant extraordinaire, Deborah Herman, at www.soul-odyssey.com. Don't forget the hyphen, soul-odyssey.com. And let us know if you enjoyed this hour talking about spiritual writing and the publishing industry, and we will add it to some of our regular shows during the month. Jeff, what else would you like to say in our remaining 10 minutes so that our listeners learn more about what to do if they want to be published?
Well, I'm not convinced that anybody is entitled to be published. And even if they're inspired by a higher power, I still don't know that that's an entitlement given to any mortal. I still feel that the process is a requirement of everyone to go through, and that they need to prove their case through the process. And I think that just makes the product and the writer that much better, that much stronger, once they get through the other side. And speaking of pitch letters, the biggest mistakes I see, and I'm only bringing this up because I see them so often, is the person will begin their letter by telling the agent how many other people have already rejected them or for how long. Or for how long they've been trying to get published without success. And
that's like if you were trying to meet someone to date them, you know, that would not be the first thing you want to say is how nobody likes you and everybody rejects you. Actually, Georgianne is calling us back from North Carolina. Let's give her a moment before I have you wrap up, Jeff. Georgianne?
I couldn't help myself. You were on a subject that I was really interested in, and I wanted to ask one more question. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
You were talking about, as far as your work, as far as a person's work is concerned, that you really have to like the work in order to want to represent it. And I wouldn't want anyone to work with me that didn't love it just a little, because I feel like that's what's going to push it forward. But does a literary agent look for someone in the publishing realm that is going to love it also, that's going to be excited about it? Is that what they're looking for?
Well, I'm speaking for myself here, not Deborah or anyone else, but I do need to level your impression. I may not personally be enamored by something I'm representing. It may not be something that I would go out and buy and stay up all night reading, but I can connect with it in that I can understand its quality, and I can respect and appreciate its quality, and I would, as a professional, would know how to sell it and get it sold, and I would know that it can be sold and how to do that. And so I would not say that, you know, I'm jumping up and down. You know, there may be books that I would prefer not to read that I sometimes will represent because I can respect them and because I know that I can sell them and that they should exist.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but quite frankly, Georgianne, for your purposes as a writer, that's really what you want. Ideally, it would be great if your publisher loved you and it was, you know, and they got it and everything else, but what they need to get is that it's a good book and should exist, and they need to give you a signed contract and put themselves behind it. Because the process that they go through to convince their colleagues to go with a particular book, they have to at least like it enough to be able to advocate on its behalf. Does that make sense?
Exactly. So I was just wondering if that's something you look for in a publisher, and if you don't feel like you're getting a sense that they would really stand behind it, would you look further to someone
else? Well, let's put it this way. Money talks. If a publisher makes an offer, and it's a good publisher, and it's a good offer, I'm not going to put them through the paces to find out whether they love it at scale 10, okay?
Right.
If they're going to do the job and they want to do the job.
But see, that's not where you need your validation. You don't need, if they're going to validate you enough by making you an offer,
they're putting themselves at risk for you. If they're publishing your book, they're putting the company's resources at risk for you. And that editor is putting his, to some measure, is putting his or her career at risk for you.
Right.
And that agent is agents work on a contingency basis. Agents don't get paid for failing. Agents only get paid for succeeding. They get a commission based on the writer's success. So, and the only thing that the agent has is his or her time each day to try to make that happen. So, and their credibility with editors. If they're trying to send some, if they're pitching something that's not worthy, they lose their credibility. So the agent is putting himself or herself at risk when they want to represent you. And they're doing it because they think there'll be a payback.
Right.
But Georgianne, I want to leave you with another thought.
Okay.
Let this baby be born and let it grow up and away from you.
Yeah. When I, okay. Yeah, I agree, because when I let it go, that's it.
And that's what I'm hearing.
I don't want to have any more control.
Right, and you've got to be willing to trust and be willing to it is like letting go of a child. But when you see it grow up and be successful away from you, you will feel the satisfaction like a mother feels when their children grow up and get married. So don't be afraid. It's going to be all good.
I know. It's just getting closer, so my fears start. I'm sorry.
Don't apologize. You've asked very excellent questions. So join us again in the future and keep listening. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
Georgianne.
Yes, and do listen again. We're going to wrap up for this evening, but no, that we're really happy that you called back, and have a great evening.
Thank you, Jeff.
I want to thank you for putting on a different hat this evening and joining me on the Soul Odyssey radio show.
You're welcome.
I do think that you are a literary agent extraordinaire, with many things to teach aspiring writers and experienced writers. And you've given a lot to the writing community, as well as agents and publishing houses. They are always telling you how much they enjoy and read the books that you do every year. Any last words?
Thank you for having me, and write because you like to do it, and get published because you know that you can.
Okay. And join us again next week. God bless. And this is Soul Odyssey, your host, Deborah Herman. Have a wonderful evening.